Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm starting with a little Dr. Seuss today. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, black fish, blue fish, old fish, new fish. This one has a little car. This one has a little star. Say, what a lot of fish there are. Any guesses as to what my show is about today? If you said fish, that would be a very good guess. Today, I talked to Sonia Strobel, a woman who married into a local fishing family and discovered that fishing for a living was a beautiful life. But as an outsider to the industry, she also noticed a problem. And that problem was that a fisherman who makes a living where he could fish his heart out and source all these beautiful fish we have in abundance in British Columbia could actually end up without a buyer or even a fair price for the whole lot. There was no stability or security in this way of life, which makes this work or practice actually unsustainable. She realized this problem needed to be solved, and since no one was going to do it, she decided it would be her. Let's listen into her story about how a non-fisherman cast a line with a proposition. That is, she created a website and offered to give you fresh seasonal fish in exchange for money. And she would let you know when that fish arrived. And in response, 40 people, then 200 people, and now thousands of people agree that in exchange for their dollars, high-quality seafood can be caught in abundance and in season for their plates at home. And as a result, support these fishermen and their families. It's a win-win. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Glow Says. And today we get to welcome Sonia Strobel, who is the co-founder and CEO of Skipper Otto Community Supported Fishery. So nice to meet you and welcome here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Sonia, let's just start right with it. Tell me about yourself. Who are you? Looking forward to hearing the story.
Sure. I'm happy to tell it. So Skipper Otto is actually my father-in-law, and I married into a fishing family back 20 years ago. As an outsider, looking at how the kind of how life was for people, you know, fishing on this coast, it's a wonderful life. And people who are passionate about fishing are committed to a real sustainable life and for the long-term health of the ecosystem and the long-term health of coastal communities.
You married into a fisherman's family. Is your husband a fisherman?
Yeah, my husband Sean's a commercial fisherman. He grew up fishing with his dad as well.
Okay, but he is a commercial fisherman. Like, he did that for a living.
That's right.
Yeah. And your father-in-law.
Yeah, fishing is one of those things where people usually get into it through their family, right?
Okay, yeah. And do you fish yourself?
No, I don't fish myself. I've been out on the boat. Okay. I have been, but it's not. No, I've.
So how did you get to creating the Skipperman sort of co-op? The Skipper Otto co-op, in addition to being married into the family, like you must have, did you bring some experience? How did you come up with the idea, or was it already there?
You know, I had always been a part of community supported agriculture programs. And okay. I don't know if folks know what those are, but Skipper Otto is a community supported fishery, and community supported agriculture are programs where people buy a share of the farmer's produce before the farmer harvests, before they even grow it, right? Before the growing season. And, I kind of married into the fishing family and saw how it was difficult to make a living. It was difficult to have security, to know what you were going to make this year off your catch. And so I started really early on actually calling friends and saying, hey, does anybody want to buy some fish directly off the boat when Otto gets home from the fishing season? Sort of realized that there had to be an easier way than phoning people and having them come pick up fish. And so having come from this background of supporting farmers and community supported agriculture programs, sort of thought, came up with this idea that, well, how could you apply that to the fishing industry? And so the idea of the community supported fishery was sort of born around the same time that my first son, Oliver, was born. Nice. I always know how old Skipper Otto is because it's the same age as my oldest son.
As your son. Oh, nice. I think it's a brilliant idea. It's a great idea to apply it to fishermen. I didn't know that fishermen had the same problems. To be perfectly honest, I would think they just go out for the day, catch what they catch, come back and sell it, and that's all.
Right, no. Exactly. Yeah. And that's what people think. And, you know, I think that fishing, people are often not aware of what's happening at sea on the boats. And so part of what we do, big part of what we do is education and just kind of opening the door so people can see what it's like out on the water.
Is there a season like with vegetables? I mean, like the farmer, if we're going to liken it to the community supported agriculture. So the farmer knows that, I don't know, cauliflower, I'm just guessing, okay, grows in August. I have no idea. Or carrot grows in June or something like that. Yeah. So they can kind of plan ahead, right? They're planting the rows, they're taking care of it. I mean, fish, you're not really planting them and taking care of it, right? That's farming fish. We don't like farming fish, right? We like wild, fresh fish, okay? But I guess there must be certain seasons for salmon to come in or for halibut or something like that.
For sure, it's very seasonal. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, people, again, people don't know. They don't know what the seasons of seafood are. And so they kind of expect much or like a piece of fresh salmon. And so they go to the grocery store looking for a piece of fresh salmon in, you know, February, which is not when you can catch salmon. In the wild here. And so, yeah, so I mean, it's also really challenging for fishermen. And by the way, women who fish tend to call themselves fishermen as well. So I'll use that term. They also often call one another harvesters or fishing families. So I'll use those words interchangeably.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for fishermen, it's hard. You can't look out at sea and see how many fish are coming. You don't know when there are going to be openings because wild fisheries have to be managed in such a way to see what's abundant in any given year. And then you can pursue fishing that. So, you know, the industry isn't designed to deal with that though, right? People expect to have, I want a piece of this today. But people really, if and I find that when they understand the seasonality and when they understand the multi-year cycles of abundance in seafood, then they can understand that it makes more sense to eat with the ecosystem, not to expect a certain piece of species on my plate on a certain day, but to say, you know what, this year, you know, coho salmon is abundant and sockeye isn't. So we're going to eat more coho salmon this year.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you're supposed to eat seasonally with produce. So why not with everything on your plate, right? That makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. What was the pain point that you saw though? Like would fishermen, okay, in my understanding, if fishermen come back in with a huge trawl of fish or a big net of fish, is it possible that they're not able to sell that fish or is it a fish that people don't want? Like what's the problem?
So, I mean, there's a bunch of different problems and really the industry,
it's not so simple.
Yeah. And you're right. People do have this impression that it's like, you know, hey, I'm a fisherman and I go out under the dock and I go out on my boat for the day. And it's kind of this idea of day boat fishing that you come back in with fresh catch. And even that isn't usually the case. A lot of cases, boats freeze at sea. A lot of cases, you're gone to sea for a couple of months and you come back in with catch that's frozen at sea.
Even a family fisherman that he's gone for a couple of months.
Yeah, okay. Tuna, for example, is one of those species here on the BC coast that tuna are migratory. So they travel through BC waters in a very certain time of year. They travel up from US waters up through BC. And so boats have to go out and they have to find out where they are and they're well offshore. And so you can be out at sea for a couple of months at a time and you're freezing at sea. And that's another thing. People sort of think that frozen fish is maybe lower quality than fresh fish. Which is not true at all. And in fact, all sushi has to have been previously frozen in order for it to be sushi grade.
And so if they can freeze it right on the boat, then that's really as fresh as you can get, isn't it?
Versus
sitting right next to the guy and eating the fish.
When you thaw it, it's really like the day that it was caught. So, so when we think about fish in that way, it's a little different from the idea of the day boat coming in with, you know, this fresh catch trying to find a market for it. Sometimes it is fresh, but sometimes it's frozen at sea. Okay. With fish is getting it out of the sea and getting it into a frozen state as quickly as possible to preserve that catch day freshness. I mean, most of what we catch in Canada is exported. You know, we export about 90% of Canadian seafood.
Oh, that much?
Mm-hmm,
okay. Is that good or bad?
Well, I think it's problematic. I think COVID illustrated to us some of the challenges with food systems and just generally supply chains when we're relying on import and export markets from far, far away. When something happens globally, those things can get disrupted and our food security can be threatened. So I think the fact that we import, somewhere around 80% of the seafood that we eat in Canada is also problematic. We have great clean waters here. We have well-managed fisheries. We have sustainable and abundant seafood. And we export it all because it's seen as a global commodity. And the purpose of that is to generate as much profit for shareholders as possible, rather than, thinking about who's eating it, who's harvesting it, what are the ways of life that we're trying to protect.
Okay. For all the Canadians listening out there, pay attention because I actually interviewed another woman who does grains and I found out that grains that are grown in Canada, 90% are shipped to France and Italy. And apparently the urban legend or the folklore goes, everyone's like, oh, I can eat bread made in Italy and France. Like European bread is great for my gut, but I can't eat any bread made at home. And she's like, guess what? 90% of that grain is from us. I'm like, what? Why? And so she's trying to capture it and keep it at home, you know, locally as well.
And if you're listening in the US, you know, it's the same thing. In fact, if you're listening all around the world, it's just global markets. And it's kind of this kind of global economy that we've created where we export everything to wherever is the, at that moment where I can get the highest price for something, rather than thinking really about our systems.
So eat locally, buy locally, just go travel globally. That's fine.
Exactly. Go visit,
you can. Eat their stuff. Right. Buy their stuff there. It's fine. Okay. So you brought your expertise and your background to this fishing family. You decided to apply the principles, which is a brilliant idea. How was it at the beginning? Like, how did your father-in-law take it or your husband? Were they like, that doesn't make any sense?
I think people thought that I was a little bit crazy. Some people in the fishing industry, certainly, I think people thought maybe it was a little bit of a harebrained idea. And really, even in the beginning, the idea wasn't to create a business. The idea was to just, there was a problem that needed to be solved right now. Mm. And so this was a project. This was a thing to do on the evenings and weekends around my high school teaching career as a way to help solve a problem. And so I don't think anyone, including Sean, my husband, or I don't think any of us really thought it would become what it is now. And so it was just a project to try to solve a problem in the immediate moment.
And when did you find out you're like, no, I'm onto something? Like, you're following the little crumbs, but when were you like, no, this is something, it's getting bigger and bigger?
Yeah. Was teaching, had a newborn baby, and was kind of doing this on the side. But right away, what was interesting, you know, I just thought, okay, somebody has to do this and nobody else is going to do it. So I guess it'll be me. So I created a website, and the proposition on the website was, mail us a check for fish and we'll catch you some fish. And we'll let you know when the fish is here and what you're getting. And that very first year, 40 trusting people mailed us checks for fish.
All your friends or just other people?
No, other people we didn't know, names I hadn't heard of. And
that's great. And that's the real business when it's people you don't recognize.
Yeah, wasn't it amazing just to think that these people, you know, believed in us, trusted us, and shared this kind of value proposition, which was like, we're going to catch what's abundant and sustainable for you this year, and you're going to get fish. And so already, right away, knew that we were kind of onto something. And then the second year, I think we went from 40 people the first year to about 200 people the second year. And so it grew very quickly, and our retention rates, you know, members stuck around because it was meeting a need that they had, which was to support local, to have really high quality, wonderful seafood, but to know that their dollars were supporting people in their community. Well, I knew right away that we were onto something because we shared a set of values that obviously resonated with people.
Wow. And at that time, it was just your father-in-law's boat that you were using at the time?
In the very first year it was. And then in the second year, when so many people joined, I remember Otto said, well, if I have a good year, that's totally fine. But if I don't have a good year, then I may not have enough fish for everyone. What would happen? And so we had other friends who were fishing as well, who also loved the idea of what we were doing and the idea of getting kind of a guaranteed fair price for whatever they caught.
Yeah.
And so they joined in as well. And so we knew that we had other fishing families. It kind of grew in that way. And other fishing families came to us and said, how can we be part of this community supported fishery that you're growing? And we have supported about 34 fishing families today.
Wow. That's awesome.
And yet the rest of the industry really isn't built for sustaining a traditional way of life in coastal communities. The rest of the industry is really designed around shareholder profit, around, you know, extraction of seafood from the sea as quickly as possible. Seafood is considered a kind of global commodity and it travels around the world and it's designed to create shareholder profit.
Okay, so maybe you can explain a little bit then about the cooperative so that for listeners who are listening, they may not know about it and they may want to participate as well. How do they participate? How did they become a member of this?
So our sign-up season runs from the middle of October until the end of May. So during that time, people decide how much seafood they think they'll eat in the course of a year. And we have a little share size calculator on our website that helps them figure that out. Say, oh, you know, there's four people in my household. We eat seafood twice a week or whatever it may be. It'll tell you a number roughly how much seafood you might, how much money you might want to spend.
That's a great idea.
So then our members buy a share of that size. So let's say it tells you to buy a $500 share. So you put $500 in. And then you have access to the members only online store right away. And you can see exactly who's out fishing, what they're catching, what's available. And you can pick and choose from the catch whatever you'd like. So you'd say, oh, look, looks like Doug brought in some halibut this week. I want a piece of halibut. Yep. And oh, I'll take some of those prawns. And you know, you put the things in your cart and you check out, and the dollar value comes off your prepaid balance that you paid ahead of time.
Okay.
And then we have members across Canada who can pick up their share at one of, oh, I think we have about 50 different pickup locations across the country.
So I'll just say I'm a member and I didn't know about it until a couple of years ago. And let me tell you how I love just putting money in. And then it's almost like a, it's not like a slot machine game, but it's almost like a game, because then every time, you know, I'm like, oh, we need some seafood in the freezer. I go, I've already paid and I can see what's freshly caught. There's always a little blog story about where it was caught, when it was caught, everything. I know it's good quality. And you think like, okay, people might be listening to this thinking, oh, but it's very expensive. It's just a little bit of fish. Okay, let me tell you, it is not very expensive. It's very reasonable. You're supporting a whole family doing this, right? Their livelihood. The fish is excellent. And I have plenty. I couldn't even use up my credit. They had to like do something special for me. Thank you, Sonia. You probably don't know that because I had to roll it over to the next year. I'm like, seriously? I thought that I would blow through that amount, like, you know, $300, whatever it was, very quickly, but I didn't. It everything is so good. It is so quality. You can see it. You can feel it. You can taste it. It's excellent. Yeah.
That's so nice to hear. And I'm just so glad you've had that experience as well, because that was really our mission, is that seafood shouldn't be this elite thing that is only for the wealthy. It really should be something that is, you know, it is of this place, of this land and the sea that we're so lucky to be living on, as and many of us are settlers on this land and so grateful to the indigenous ancestors who took such good care of this land and sea before we came here. And so it really is a wonderful thing to be able to access, and something that we should be able to eat and nourish ourselves with.
I totally agree. You know, I learned things too. Like, okay, for example, I think last week there was something about spiny scallops. Now I look at this picture and, you know, I look at the description. I'm like, that looks like something that might be from Japan or somewhere more exotic. Maybe Spain. I don't know. I don't know my scallops. But no, lo and behold, it's right here up in BC. And I was very surprised. And I'm like, okay, I'm definitely going to get some of that, because it just looks so like restaurant quality. I don't know what to say. It just, you know, but I can have it so easily. I can just go somewhere very close by to pick it up, and it's in my freezer and on my table. Yeah.
And so often people think of seafood like this is something that like chefs at restaurants get to access. Yeah. But it isn't. You know, we have such abundance of wonderful seafood here that, like you say, most people don't even know is here.
Exactly.
Because it's all exported. So
it's all exported, and they just kind of go to Safeway or Choices and they're like, okay, whatever they have. But actually, that's not the case. It doesn't have to be whatever they have. So I like your model. I love what you're doing.
I'm so glad. Thanks.
So why don't you tell us about some of the problems? Like, it's all happy and good, but I'm sure it's not easy for you to run. I mean, 34 boats, that's a lot. And how many members do you have now?
We have, let's see, I think we're at 5,200 members.
Wow.
Yeah. And our sign-up season still goes till the end of May. It looks like we're on track for somewhere around 7,000 or 8,000 members this year.
Right. Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Well, what does that mean for you? If you get more members, you can support more boats then.
That's right. We can support more families and buy more of their catch. So in some cases, you know, a family may have come aboard and we're only able to buy a small percentage of their catch, but we can increasingly buy more and just provide them with more stability and more certainty for the year ahead. You know, 2020 was a difficult year for everyone with COVID-19. But for fishing families, you know, a lot of those export markets disappeared and fishing families suddenly didn't have a market for their catch. You know, the traditional buyer was exporting to Asia and suddenly there was no market. And as those markets shifted and disappeared, fishing families were often offered half or even, you know, a third of the price that they received in the previous year.
Okay.
Whereas those families fishing for Skipperado, we kept our prices the same or more than what we paid them in previous years.
That's
for a lot of fishing families, it was a real game changer. It was a real savior for that, for their fishing season.
But what did they do during COVID? Did they go out and fish anyway? Do you have to fish anyway?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, in a lot of cases, you've already paid to lease a license or a boat. And so you're already into it for tens of thousands of dollars.
Right.
And so you've got to try to get out there and earn back those losses. But we were there waiting, like we're ready to, whenever you can go fishing, you bring that in.
Yeah.
So people needed to fish. Once you're out on a boat, in most cases, when you're out on a small scale boat, maybe it's you and your own family members, you're very isolated. But we also needed to make sure that, remote and indigenous coastal communities where fish would be offloaded would be safe. And so there was a lot of work to do to make sure that people could be safe.
Because I think people in BC, they just think, oh, we've got salmon. We've got loads of salmon. Mm-hmm. What else do we have?
Tuna, for example, is a wonderful BC catch. It's the tuna that we have here are albacore. They're a little bit smaller than sometimes people think of, they're massive. Tuna. Yeah, that's right. And so the tuna that we have here don't have a problem with mercury. So you can eat albacore tuna as much as you like. There's no problem with heavy metals in it. Wow. So, we have great options. Halibut, lingcod is something people sometimes have never even heard of. And it's a beautiful white fish, which I just love. And then you mentioned the spiny scallops. We do have scallops on this coast. Wonderful shellfish, mussels and oysters as well. We have here shrimp and prawns, five species.
I love those.
Of salmon. Yeah, we have crab and we have lots of great seafood on the BC coast.
So what else can you tell us? Why don't you tell us what's going on with the cooperative now? It's great. We know how it works and how it's going and how our dollars go to support a family, support the local industry. What's going on with it now? I'm sure there's a lot more to running what you do, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. It's interesting because, what we're doing is we're kind of redesigning the seafood business here with a different set of values in mind. And because we're designing it for social justice, for environmental justice, for access, for local food systems, because we're designing it that way, the rest of the industry isn't designed that way. So sometimes we feel like, we're trying to put round pegs in square holes. Software is one example of that. It takes a lot of systems and procedures to manage all the complex moving parts of what we've built. And there really isn't pre-existing software to do all the things that we
do.
And the same goes for farmers who are trying to sell their, whether it's meat or vegetables or fruit, they're trying to sell direct to end consumer. There really isn't software to help them manage all that complexity. So we've been involved in a really exciting project to build out the software to manage that, not just for us at Skipper Auto, but for other food producers to have a really truly flexible system that doesn't make them force their business model into somebody else's system, but that lets them build the model that supports them the way that they need it.
And
is totally flexible for that. So that's an exciting project that we're
working on. Yeah, that's excellent. So even you have to jump into the digital space.
Even us.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, there is the logistics, I guess, involved with every company, right? It's always operations and making sure everything runs smoothly.
Right.
On top of a great idea.
That's right. And that system is designed for export. And so people often look at us and say, why are you making your life so difficult? Just, sell your catch in the same way everybody else does for export, because our goal isn't just to make money in the same way that everybody else makes money. The goal here is to change systems to support families, support people and ecosystems. And so you kind of have to reinvent all the time.
That's right. So is one of the things that I've missed then, all your catch, Skipper Auto's catch, it's just local. You don't export it, right?
Don't export outside of Canada. That's right. So all of our seafood goes within Canada.
Okay. And do you ship it across to people in Newfoundland, for example?
We haven't gone as far as Newfoundland. So we would love to see ways to help support harvesters on the East Coast to be able to, set up similar models to have their fish go into the hands of local people there. But we do have pickups from Victoria, BC, all the way to Ottawa, Ontario.
Oh, okay.
And as far north as Peace River and some northern areas as well. So...
And do we have enough fish to support all of Canada?
Yeah, it's a very valuable question. I think people wonder that all the time. And are we, is there enough wild fish in the sea? And do we need to farm fish in order to have enough fish to feed the world?
I've always wondered about that farm fish thing.
And the truth is, we have an incredible abundance of seafood on the West Coast here. If people are open to eating what is abundant any given year. So again, that's that concept of eat with the ecosystem rather than chase one species. We have this abundance of seafood. seafood. And harvesting wild seafood is really, you know, being predators in an ecosystem. You know, we are animals on this planet who take our nourishment from other living beings on the planet. One of the things when people often think about farmed fish, they think, oh, well, let's farm it and then that's superior. And that can be a solution. Aquaculture can be a solution in certain ways. But one of the problems that people aren't thinking about is that the fish that people most want to eat and that they farm in the most is salmon. Mm. And salmon are carnivorous. And generally, when you think about farming, we don't farm carnivorous animals. Mm. The animals that we farm are herbivores. Mm. And to farm a carnivorous animal means that you have to feed it another animal. And so salmon eat fish.
Okay.
And so if you're going to farm them, then you have to catch something else to feed them. So it really doesn't solve the world's, you know, overfishing, because that which is being overfished is often the small fish, for example, off the coast of Africa, the western coast of Africa, where we're stripping these small fish that would otherwise be feeding people who have poor access to protein, stripping the seas of those cheap small fish to feed them to farmed salmon. And to me, that presents a whole host of other
problems. Wow. Oh, yeah, that is. Oh, okay. Wow. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, if you could solve something, like, what's your biggest problem right now? And it, would money solve it? Like, you know, I know you've got a whole host of problems, but you're locally focused, right? And you're trying to re-educate us here in local BC to support people here. Would, and if, say, you could get as much money as you could right now, what would be the biggest problem you could solve with that? Or is it money? Is it education? What is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're, unlike a lot of businesses, we're not hampered by that same, you know, always fundraising, always trying to access capital. Because our model is really sort of self-contained in an interesting way, because our members pre-purchase the catch before we catch it. And right out of the gate, that was an intentional design, not to have to be dependent on funding to be able to make social change.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of our theory of social change is ground up one-on-one. And so we really believe that the most powerful change happens on that kind of grassroots ground up level. And so we work one-on-one with fishing families. We work directly with home cooks, not with, you know, distribution companies and wholesalers and all of that complexity. So our model is really beautifully self-contained, and we're able to grow it as members come aboard, more fishing families come aboard. Yeah. And so we're not in a position where we're really hampered by the conventional things that as businesses face around cash flow and that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I'm realizing that now as I talk to you, and that's really great. You're a teacher. Maybe you could go into the schools and educate from the ground up there. Other teachers, the kids, you know, that would be a whole unit just to understand where fish comes from, what we've got available here, and what happens to it if we let it go, you know,
it's
somewhere.
Very true. And I think that's really so much of what I do is education.
Yeah, I think so.
Skipper Otto was also a high school teacher, and so was my husband, Sean. And there's a lot of us teachers kicking around here at Skipper Otto. And so we all really believe that when people have good information, when they have knowledge, they make good choices. And so you're right. At its heart, you know, sometimes I think back to, you know, my past, and people would probably have voted me like the person least likely to start a fish company. where came out of left field? Where did that come from? But actually, when you think about it, what I do is education. And I think sometimes people think of teachers or educators as content area experts, but actually that's not what makes the best teacher. What makes the best teacher is somebody who's a facilitator, right? Somebody who can create opportunities for people to listen, people to connect, people to develop their own ideas. And that's really what we do.
Exactly. Okay. So an idea for you in the summer when kids, you know, all your friends' kids come and they want a summer job, don't put them on the boats, put them in the schools to educate them about, you know, about fish, basically. Yeah. Yeah. And the whole ecosystem of it here.
Yeah. Yeah. So much to learn, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, there is. There always is. Okay. Just a fun question for you. What's your favorite fish? What's your favorite way to eat fish? Maybe I should say.
It's such a difficult question. I get asked it all the time because I love it all. There's so much good fish.
You only eat fish?
No, I do eat other things. In fact, we have a wonderful actual farmer who farms pork for us up in Merritt. She just came down for delivery yesterday, so we are stocked again with her beautiful meat. Awesome. But we eat a lot of fish for sure. You mentioned lingcod, and I was thinking about how much love lingcod and how versatile and flexible it is. Whitefish, it's a bit like halibut. I find it's easier to cook. It's easier to deal with. You know, it doesn't.
Okay.
Halibut is easy to overcook. If you leave it cook for too long,
it's so thick. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love lingcod for that. And I was thinking about one of my, you know, how I love to cook, what's my go-to, right?
Yeah.
And whether we're talking about lingcod or salmon or halibut, I think one of my favorite ways, and I learned this from Chef Ned Bell, who you might know, he's a wonderful local chef. And he taught me this technique and I use it all the time. And it's a pan sear and then into the oven. So, you know, if you have a cast iron pan or some kind of a pan that's oven proof, putting that on the stove, get it really, really hot, little bit of canola oil onto the pan, put the fish on it, skin side up at first. So you sear the top there just for a couple of minutes and then flip it over to the skin side down, maybe a little bit of butter and lemon into the pan. And as that melts, you can spoon it over and that helps you get a crust, a beautiful crust on the surface of the fish. And then into an oven, not too hot, like a 325 degree Fahrenheit oven.
Okay.
A few minutes in there. And what that does is it just allows it to cook slowly through the center so it's not too high a heat. Fish on too high a heat, the muscles contract and you squeeze out the protein, the albumin, you see the white that comes out of it. Yeah,
that's
you don't really want to do that. It'll dry it out. So, you know, 325 oven and depending on the thickness of it, the most important thing with fish is not to overcook it. So if you've got an instant read thermometer, 125 Fahrenheit, get the fish out. It'll continue to cook when it comes out. So you take it out when it's still kind of underdone. And that piece of fish that you've seared and then slowly cooked in the oven, you can do anything. That can go into a burger. That can go onto a salad, on a plate with a side, a beautiful salad. It's just such a great base, flavorful and that little caramelized outside. So that's kind of my favorite way to cook a piece. And, you know, when you're cooking a piece of fish, the great thing, you can take it out of the freezer.
Yeah.
When you get home from work, you forgot, you don't know what you're having for dinner. You can take that out. And while it thaws, you're prepping everything else. And then you're searing it. And you're talking about like 5 to 10 minutes to cook a piece of fish.
Right? Yeah, no. And fish is good for, it's brain food, right? So that's what everyone says. It's good for you.
Sure is.
Okay, we have heard a little bit about what's going forward, like, you know, some logistical digital thing, which sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anything else we should know about?
Well, I'll let you in on a really exciting new fishing family that we've brought aboard.
Okay.
So this is very exciting for Skipperado because to date, all of our fishing families have been on the BC coast. And so we're now welcoming aboard a fishing family from Canada's Arctic.
Oh, Canada's Arctic. Okay, interesting. Yeah. Okay,
and And so we're working with a group up in Nunavut called Lake to Plate.
Okay.
And this is a group that's helping Inuit fishermen who fish for Arctic char in the lakes in the winter.
Wow.
To connect to folks in the south who would like to eat this beautiful, beautiful catch from Canada.
Char, fantastic. Wow, that is exciting.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes.
You can go on our website. You can see video of Daryl as he goes out on his snowmobile.
Oh, wow.
As he uses the auger to cut a hole in the ice and then how they use a gill net, very much like salmon fishing, but hand pulling this net up from the lake ice and these beautiful Arctic char. And so I just had some of the first of it, and I'm telling you, it's just a delicious and beautiful fish. Comes with an amazing story, and we're able to support an Inuit family that wants to persist in a traditional fishing way of life, and they can because members are supporting them for that catch.
Good. That's amazing. I'm very excited about that as a member, and I'm definitely going to get some.
Great.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Well, you know what? It was so great to have you here, Sonia. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us? You've given us your story. You've told us about what's going on. We really appreciate it.
Well, that's great. You know, it's been wonderful chatting with you. And for your listeners who are in Canada, they can keep in mind that Skipperado member sign up goes until the end of May. So May 31st is when sign up ends for the year. And then it opens up again in October. So if you're listening to this in the summer, you know, go ahead, check out our website. We have a kind of like a wait list there where you can get onto the interested mailing list and be the first to be notified when sign up happens and get a share of the catch. And, you know, if you live in the US or if you live elsewhere in the world, there's a growing movement of community supported fisheries that we're so proud to be part of. You can go to a website called localcatch.org and Local Catch has a CSF finder. So you can look it up, enter your zip code your postal code and see if there's a community supported fishery near you. And if there isn't, and if you're lucky enough to live on the coast, you know, I always encourage folks to know your fishermen, go down to the docks, meet people, get your seafood with as few, where it's changed hands as few times as possible, you know, where you've got the shortest supply chain possible. And then you can be sure it's going to be the best quality and the freshest. And also that your dollars are flowing into hands that you want to support.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for all your information and your time.
Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay. You take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
I hope you and I reach the same conclusion that Sonia Strobel is a soft-talking, well-spoken, courage-taking, reinventing, action-making business dynamo who is committed to skippering change in an industry that she believes in and is passionate about. A true innovator and leader in an age-old industry or way of living. Sonia's main message and mission for change: let's support our Canadian fish harvesters by eating seafood in abundance and in season, rather than chasing one piece of food in particular at any one time. For example, coho's in season this year, so let's eat coho and wait for sockeye to come back in abundance in the next cycle. Or maybe it's lingcod that we have a lot of. Cook that instead. Let's eat from and protect our local catch and continue to harvest from what was taken care of so well for us by our First Nations and Indigenous peoples. Get on board. Join this incredible team. This is the boat you should be on. It's called the Skipper Auto Community Supported Fishery. And for those of you that listen from the U.S. and abroad, similar options are available in your nearby waters as well. Find me at Glow Says anywhere you listen to podcasts, and I'll talk to you soon.